Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. The Indiana General Assembly is meeting in Indianapolis, state lawmakers in their short session. The actual budget is written every 2 years, but there's still a lot going on. To help interpret the headlines, we turn to Ed Feigenbaum, sometimes called the Dean of the Indiana Statehouse Reporters. And though he's been covering the legislature since the late 1980s, it's about more than longevity. He's an attorney and publisher of three very respected newsletters, Indiana Legislative Insight, Indiana Gaming Insight, and Indiana Education Insight. Previously, he worked for the Council of State Governments and other public policy organizations. In short, he's a kind of policy wonk who can still translate it all into plain English. We met up in Pendleton and borrowed a conference room at the town hall to chat. If you've been following news from the Statehouse, you might think all they're going to focus on this year is road building and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Not exactly, Feigenbaum says.
Well, there are really two levels to this legislative session, John. You know, what we've got is the RFRA and civil rights debate, the anti-discrimination debate, kind of overarching, overshadowing things. But we're really not going to have them get into the weeds on that until toward the end of January. And in the meantime, you've got the stuff of government. And when you've got such a controversial set of issues like all this anti-discrimination or RFRA stuff, you know, obviously legislators want to get on to everybody's good side too. So what we're seeing, or what we're going to see, is a lot of the 1990s Bill Clinton-esque kind of small ball being played here. If you look at the legislative agendas laid out by the governor, by the Senate Republicans, by the House Republicans, by the Senate Democrats, and by the House Democrats, you're not going to see anything beyond the road funding issues that are really big kinds of mega dollar or major interest kinds of issues. You're seeing a lot of small daily life kinds of things, quality of life issues that you think, oh yeah, they ought to just go ahead and pass that. Things like veterans' preferences for state business and for other business things. Things like a veteran's checkoff on your tax returns, or a veterans game with the proceeds from this lottery game being directed to military veterans relief. Family relief fund, those kinds of things, things that Republicans and Democrats have no problems agreeing on, and they can kind of get them in the right frame of mind before they start dealing with the kinds of things that are going to kind of divide the state rather than unite them.
Well, isn't it always true that they save the very tough stuff for the end, right? It's a truism in negotiating that the agreement gets done at the deadline.
Oh, absolutely, and it's just by a few people as well. But this one is going to involve a lot more people, and just the fact that we've got three different bills right now that are essentially leadership-type bills on this anti-discrimination front, you know, indicates that there is no kind of consensus on this, even within the two majority caucuses in the legislature, and that the governor hasn't necessarily defined things the way that legislators might like to get things kicked off with. And so everybody's still kind of searching for solutions. The problem is that no one has come up with something, and nobody's going to be able to come up with something that will fully satisfy those that believe that religious liberties and religious freedom should come first, and others that believe that civil rights and anti-discrimination provisions should come above that or be consonant with that. So it's going to be very difficult to merge those interests. And essentially, Indiana is paving the way for the country because we're really starting the debate on this. And being first on anything is something that Hoosiers are never very comfortable being, particularly those who are Hoosier elected officials.
And this issue isn't quite as easy to define by which side of the aisle that you're on. I mean, over time, right, hasn't it been more complicated than just Democrat and Republican in terms of how people come down on issues like this?
Generally speaking, yes. On the RFRA anti-discrimination issue, it's a little bit less cut and dried than that. If you've got Democrats who are essentially united on this, legislative Democrats that are are fully behind the civil rights and anti-discrimination provisions. Then you've got kind of a split on, in the Republican caucuses as to where they stand. You know, one of the guys that was behind the RFRA initiative in the first place is now proposing legislation to repeal RFRA and kind of start all over on that. There are some people that think that they may have made a mistake with their votes last time among the majority caucus members in both chambers. And there are others that just are legitimately, you know, undecided, that are grappling with this as a conscience-based issue. And then there are those on the other side of the anti-discrimination folks that, you know, have their minds made up, saying that religious liberties are preeminent and they will not support something that does not make that so.
Remember a few years ago when Mitch Daniels said, hey, let's put aside for a moment. Remind us of that.
Yeah. Governor Daniels essentially pushed through, advocated, wouldn't stand for anything other than what people referred to as a truce on social issues, or as the Democrats called them back then, those wedge issues. He felt that it was much more important to devote state time and effort to promoting economic development and job creation, boosting education in the state, than to have legislators spend their time and divide the state by talking about and working out deals on those kinds of social issues that Hoosiers legitimately could not come to consensus on. Governor Pence, I think, takes a different view of things, although I think you will see in the campaign that John Gregg will say, well, I told you so back 4 years ago, that he was going to be that kind of governor, that the social issues would come to the fore with Governor Pence. But at the same time, the governor, I think, will be emphasizing the fact that even with the RFRA flap, as everybody calls it, from 2015, that we're still seeing record economic development numbers, job creation continuing to soar over previous marks, and that, you know, we've essentially overcome any kind of stigma from this. And so, yeah, let's go and settle this. Let's actually move on these social issues, because it's not having the same kind of effect that some of these business leaders claim that it would.
Ed Feigenbaum, lawyer and longtime independent reporter at the Indiana State House. Coming up, does anybody really understand what last year's RFRA law actually meant?
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Ed Feigenbaum, I know besides being the publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight, Indiana Education Insight, and Indiana Gaming Insight, you're an attorney, and maybe you can help us untangle this, because in the midst of the RFRA flap, there were those who said, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. You're mischaracterizing. It's the media.
Being a lawyer does not help in the least on this. And in fact, there's a representative from East Central Indiana, Greg Beimer, who is an economic development official, who voted against the RFRA bill, one of the few Republicans to do so in the House last year. And he said, the reason that I did this was because I read the bill, I didn't understand what it would do, and I listened to testimony in the committee where we had different professors from the Indiana University School of Law come in and tell us totally different things about what the bill intended and what the bill would effectively do. He said, and if the lawyers can't tell me, you know, what it's going to do, and everybody else is telling me from the business community that it's going to hurt our economic development initiatives, and I'm an economic development professional, he said, I can't vote for this bill. So I think a lot of people, you know, now in retrospect are kind of thinking in the same terms as Representative Beimer. And, you know, I read that bill and I couldn't understand what it really intended to do, or, you know, what it would do either. You know, I saw, you know, some of what folks on both sides were saying in there. And, you know, obviously, you know, without the benefit of this actually going into effect, you know, the Nancy Pelosi viewpoint of, well, we've got to pass this bill to see, you know, what it really says, it's difficult to really understand what the impact would be.
Some people say the Republicans are held hostage, in effect, by their base on this, and that there might be greater room for compromise if that were not so. Is that a fair analysis?
Well, I think that's part of the analysis. And Speaker Brian Bosma from Indianapolis is a guy who's been through a lot of these debates. He's the most senior member of the Republican caucus elected in 1986. Nobody's seen anything like RFRA, but he's been through a lot of these different things that were, you know, the political debate of the year or the decade or whatever, or so we thought until the next one came along. But, you know, he's very pragmatic. He has a political future of his own, statewide political future of his own in mind. And one thing that distinguishes Speaker Bosma from some of his predecessors is that he has become, in recent years, more the Speaker of the House rather than the Speaker of his party. And he understands that the Speaker of the House, and I think Republicans and the U.S. Congress are starting to understand this, the Speaker has a bigger role than just being the leader of the party. And that's why we've got, for example, a majority floor leader who is really the partisan representative of the party, the partisan point person. And the Speaker, and in particular, I think Speaker Bosma is taking a little bit broader a perspective, wider a view of things and understanding where it fits in, not just for his party, but for the state as a whole and for the future of the General Assembly, relationships between not just the Speaker and the Governor, but the next Speaker and the Governor, the next legislature and governors going forward. And that's going to be very, very helpful in this debate because it's not going to be limiting his caucus to the way that things might have been done back in the 1980s or 1990s.
Is that almost something you have to do, an approach you have to take when you have majorities in both houses?
Usually it's just the opposite. You know, if you've got the power and you don't have to worry about accountability, you just do what you want. But I think that he understands that with responsibility comes a degree of accountability. And there are a lot of people that say that, you know, that the pendulum's getting ready to swing back the other way and that not only could the supermajority be imperiled, but, you know, any kind of Republican majority or substantial Republican majority can be imperiled by, you know, any kind of overreach, particularly at this point after 2015. And you've got, interestingly, an Indiana Chamber of Commerce that's, you know, always been viewed as the auxiliary wing of the Indiana Republican Party through the decades, standing against the what we did last year with RFRA and pushing for civil rights reforms, anti-discrimination provisions. And they grade legislators on these things, and they're going to score them on all of these votes, and that's going to be a consideration when it comes time to supporting people in not only primaries, but in general elections. So if you've got some things at play here that you typically don't have in a given session and some different forces that might be allied, the business community in general, the Indiana Chamber in specific, with the Republican Party that may not be there for them depending upon what happens this session.
This land is your land. This land. Ed Feigenbaum, the first stop for any new reporter coming to cover the Indiana State House. He's been around since the late 1980s and understands how things work there. Interesting to hear his thoughts on the possible impact that the RFRA debate, which is still not over, could have this year when people vote in the legislative and governor elections.
And I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, and all around me a voice was singing.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
I'm Ed Feigenbaum. I'm the editor of Indiana Legislative Insight and publisher of that newsletter and Indiana Gaming Insight, Indiana Education Insight. Been around the Indiana legislative process doing this since the late 1980s. Spent time before then working for the Council of State Governments and public policy organizations, and just find all of the dynamics here, that the people in politics that make the policy, to be absolutely fascinating. And the 2016 session is kind of the microcosm, the apex, whatever, of all of this, and so it makes it even more interesting. And at the same time that you've got, you know, these overarching 40,000-foot issues like the RFRA fix or anti-discrimination provisions, civil rights provisions, whatever, as much as they will protest the fact that there's going to be so much attention directed to the civil rights and anti-discrimination legislation. They also know that can be an excuse as opposed to actuality. And, you know, they're not going to be spending 24 hours a day on this. They've already told us, you know, a number of legislators have blamed this on the media, that it's just media hype and that it's really not consuming all of their time. And if you look at the agendas that each of the four caucuses and the governor have set out, there are a lot of substantive measures on there. You know, not a lot of them are big kinds of issues like the road funding and infrastructure issues, but they're important issues. You know, things like medical malpractice reform. We haven't seen any kind of change in the damage limits for medical malpractice in 17 years. We've only seen two changes in that in the last 40 years, even after the Indianapolis Star won a Pulitzer Prize for their reporting on that. Nobody changed the system until several years later. So we're starting to see parties come together, parties meaning the interested parties, not the political parties, come together on this because they understand that, you know, if they keep the current cap, that it's probably going to be declared unconstitutional soon, and they're going to be forced to do it. So let's get ahead of it. So we're starting to see legislators do that kind of work. We're also seeing some attention paid to, you know, something that everybody else is now saying is a crisis, the scourge of prescription drug abuse and heroin abuse in communities that range from, you know, Muncie and Pendleton to, you know, Indianapolis and Gary. But it's not just an urban kind of thing anymore. It's now a suburban and rural thing, as we saw with the HIV, literally, crisis, the epidemic in Scott County over the last year that was essentially a world record number of HIV cases attributable to prescription drug abuse. So we're starting to see some attention paid to attacking that problem. And that's another one of those things that legislators can go home and say, hey, this matters in your neighborhood. This matters in your block, your community, in our district. And we're working on these things and we're working together on them. They're not partisan issues.
I'm thinking about roads and transportation and the bridge on Interstate 65 that was, you know, out of service for a while and the horrible condition of many of the roads in the state. There's some proposals for that, and help us understand how, you know, one group says we want to spend this much and the next group says, no, twice that. What's really going on?
Everybody's starting with their own bargaining positions, and we're going to end up with something. Everybody's agreed we're going to have something. And I think the framework is going to be the legislation that's pushed by Representative Ed Solody of Valparaiso, the chair of the House Committee on Roads and Transportation. And we are going to see, and this is where I think Speaker Bosma is playing the role of Speaker of the House and Speaker of the State of Indiana. We're going to see some kind of revenue enhancements proposed. And, you know, to a lot of people, revenue enhancements is an Indianapolis way, an inside the limestone way of saying tax increases. And, you know, we're going to hear about indexing of the gas sales tax.
And then the gasoline excise tax has not been increased.
In a number of years. And, you know, even though people think that this goes directly to roads and to infrastructure, it goes to the general fund. And then it gets parceled out from there. So there are going to be proposals, and you are going to see more, if not all of that, devoted in coming years to what people think it's going to. You know, a lot of people thought back in the day that all this money from the Hoosier Lottery was going to education, and it wasn't, but that was a misperception. People think that the gas tax is going toward their roads and bridges, and it's not all going there. So I think you're going to see some changes there. You're going to see indexing. You're going to perhaps see actual tax increases on that. And right now there's a split. The governor does not want to see tax increases, but the governor's proposal also doesn't call for any increase in funding for local government road building or road maintenance. And that's something that the Republicans and Democrats in both the House and Senate want to see in a final package, and you will see in a final package, and the governor will sign it. There's going to be the early release of about $420 million. I think the real number is $418 million from some funds that have been built up. Senator Brant Hirschman of Buck Creek in Tippecanoe County near that Wildcat Creek Bridge that you just referred to is carrying legislation that would move some of that money back to the localities a lot earlier than they'd expected, and that's going to be money that they can start spending on roads, you know, this summer. And knowing that that money is going to be coming through, they can start the bid letting process here in January and be ready to start spending that money and putting shovels in the ground, as we're fond of saying. But you're going to see a combination of different ideas. Nobody in any of the four caucuses or in the governor's office believes that they have the monopoly on good ideas. And there are some elements of every package that's been proposed by every caucus that you're going to see in a final piece. And this is only going to be the start, mind you. This is going to be a very short-term kind of program, and it's going to get the discussion going, as Ed Soliday says, the Roads and Transportation Committee chair. It's going to start the dialogue for next session, for the budget year, on what we want to do on a long-term basis, because we know that even with freeing up, you know, basically $1 billion right now, you know, that's not going to mean anything beyond some basic maintenance that's been long needed. What we need to do and what legislators recognize and I think are finally beginning to agree that we have to start funding and funding on a reality-based kind of level is our long-term road building and maintenance needs. And we're looking at different kinds of things in some of this legislation, like adding another travel lane, a third travel lane each way on I-70 going east-west, I-65 going north-south, and perhaps tolling that third lane to pay for it.
Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight and other newsletters on gaming and education. He's the longest-serving reporter covering the General Assembly and state government. We're doing a couple of shows on state policy this month as lawmakers tackle the RFRA debate, the plan to pay for highways and local road repairs, issues around school testing, and other matters before the General Assembly. We've also got some very fun shows on interesting non-policy topics coming up as well. You may have heard some of our recent shows with interesting folks like the student veterans who are helping underprivileged kids and the family farmers bringing in the Hoosier harvest, the volunteers that we've met. And now, by the way, of course, you can see Indiana Weekend on WIPB television. Some overlap, some of the stories, but of course, much more visual on TV. It's a different look, and we edit them differently. And I hope that you will check your local listings and check us out on WIPB. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.